This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming out to Comic Book Club Live. Please give it up for your hosts, Alex and Pete.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And that's our dad at the booth, Booth Bad
Prime.
Guys, thank you so much for coming out tonight. Very excited to see you here. A big night. Very exciting
night.
Huge night. But Pete, we always well plan out an opening bit before the show. We work on it for weeks beforehand. But right before the show, Pete wanted to talk about, he said, listen, let's talk about our President's Day weekend.
Yeah, like how was your weekend, man? Did you have the day off on Monday?
It's great. You guys are probably really interested in this, right? I don't know. We just got a Wii U. I didn't want to make everybody jealous, but
wow. What's up, money bags?
Yeah, we finally pulled the plug on that.
Woo!
Pretty great. Got a used game for it and played that all day.
What was the used game? Don't keep
Harry Potter years 1 through 4.
Oh, wow.
Bam. Pete, what about you? How was your President's Day? Punisher got canceled.
Yeah, I cried into a garbage plate. It was sad.
That's, by the way, that's not a metaphor. That's a Rochester dish that he actually cried into.
Yeah.
Are you feeling okay? Are you recovered?
Yeah, you know, I'm all right. Sure. There'll be another chance for Punisher to be.
Did you, when you heard the Punisher got canceled, did you watch the Punisher again?
Yep.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
How much of the Punisher?
As much as I could.
Oh, Jesus. How much, just remind me, in the first weekend of Punisher Season 2, you watched 37 hours of the Punisher?
Yep, yeah.
Great. That's crazy. Very excited about our guest, who hopefully is not quite as crazy as that. He's actually one of our favorite people to have on the show. He is a writer for New York Magazine and Vulture.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Abraham Riesman!
Welcome back to the show, sir. Welcome back.
Come, sit down.
Have a microphone.
Yay. Hello. Yay.
Hooray.
Yay.
I love being here.
Oh, we love having you
here. You guys are so friendly.
I feel like the last time you were on the show, we were in a hot attic. Is that right?
That was like the second to last time. Hot attic was the day that we first learned about the Trump pee tape.
Oh, right. I remember that.
It was like all we could talk about before the show started. And we had no idea how big a thing it was going to become.
And then we had to pivot to comic books.
Which, I mean, comic books sort of prepares you for weird stuff like that happening in reality, right? Yeah. Like, I feel like people who've been reading Gonzo sequential art for their entire lives were a little better prepared for the Trump presidency.
Yeah, there was a large chunk of X-Men comics in the 90s that were pretty much nothing but P-tapes.
Yes, so. That's right.
It's true.
Uh-huh.
So you've been super busy. You've been doing a lot of stuff.
I've been doing a lot of stuff. Yeah.
I mean, the big thing that you were doing, your big news, is you went part-time.
Yeah, part-time at New York Mag because I'm writing a book. I'm writing a biography of none other than Uncle Stan Lee for Penguin Random House. Yeah, so I've been working on that. Thank you.
Can you talk about how did that come together?
Sure. It's a weird story insofar as I had spent years pitching books, never to any avail, and actually, I would say to decreasing avail as time went on. Like it started out with like I did a proposal with my book agent in like 2016, and we like got to have a meeting with an editor, and it was really exciting. And then by the end, it was just me tossing stuff into the void and nothing happening. And then out of the void, I got an email from an editor at Penguin Random House. Who wanted me to write this biography. He reached out right after Stan passed away. I felt like now was a time to begin working on a story about the guy's entire life. And so, you know, I had to go through various approval processes, and I had to write an outline and blah, blah, blah. None of that is interesting to listen to me talk about. But eventually, yeah, I got approved. So I a few weeks ago got back from 3 weeks of book-related travel. I went to scenic Laramie, Wyoming, which is where other comics journalists and historians have also made pilgrimages in the past, because that is, bizarrely enough, where Stan Lee's archives are housed at the University of Wyoming.
Now, why is that?
Basically, in the early 1980s, the short answer is they asked. And no one else had asked prior to them, and there were not other people asking at the time. And Stan was very susceptible to flattery. So when they said, we want to store your archives at the University of Wyoming at the American Heritage Center, which is a place that stores the archives of a number of cultural figures, this is the early 80s, and he just said, well, who else is there? And well, this is his story, at least. And they said a list of names, and when they got to Jack Benny, Stan went, well, if it's good enough for Jack Benny, then it's good enough for me. Now, most of you probably don't even know who Jack Benny is, right? I know. Yeah. I heard an I know.
Wait, okay, was that great. I know. Well, one guy does. So everybody
does. So, you know, famous comedian from the early to mid 20th century. And Stan, of course, being born in 1922, was very much of a generation that appreciated Jack Benny. So, yeah, so his stuff is there. And it's a lot of freaking stuff. I can't remember. Can I swear on this podcast?
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
Okay, it's a lot of motherfucking stuff. Let me tell you. It's just, there's like 194 boxes of
holy shit.
Papers, recordings, like cassette tapes, reel-to-reel tapes, VHS tapes, DVDs. It's a treasure trove, and you could really never get through all of it in like a year. And I had 5 days to just wow. try and blitz through and get. Luckily, I had this sassy septuagenarian research assistant who apparently the preferred term is proxy researcher. I learned this. So if you don't want to insult somebody, call them a proxy researcher. And she was like, you know, Pele with a scanner. It was incredible. Like she was able to just, I would like flag things and just, you know, she would just scan the shit out of them, let me tell you, and label the hell out of them.
So when you were going through this, were there specific things you were looking for, specific minds?
You know, I didn't have like one specific mystery I was trying to solve. It was basically just what information do I want to get in bulk and then look at later? Because I didn't really have time to investigate most of this stuff. I had to just go, okay, I'm glancing at this sheet of paper. Does it look like something I might want? Okay, I'm going to flag it, and then the sassy septuagenarian is going to scan it for me. And then, you know, when it came to the recordings, I'd like listen to the first few minutes or watch the first few minutes and be like, does this seem like it's going to get good? Like, there's no way you can totally tell, but it's like, there's a good vibe going on here. And then sometimes I would request things just based on, like, the date. Like, I requested copies of virtually everything that was very early, because as comics historians will know, the comics industry was super fly-by-night as of the early 60s. So, like, there wasn't a whole lot of, like, archiving going on of any kind. I mean, Martin Goodman, the publisher who ran, you know, what became Marvel Comics, was famously just sort of a schlockmeister, so he was not really interested in kind of the prestige of his publications. So, basically, if you can find anything in that archive from, like, 1965, you want it, because they didn't start really taking this endeavor of, like, saving stuff seriously until around, like, the late 60s. So, anyway, that's a long-winded way of saying I didn't really have one specific thing I was looking for. I was just trying to shovel in as much as I possibly could.
What's going to be your take on Stan Lee? Are you just going to try
to
tell a story?
You know, that's a great question.
He's bad.
No. I'm not sure yet. I mean, I have oodles and oodles of thoughts about Stanley Martin Lieber, but I don't... you know, you're getting a real window into the process here, you guys.
Yeah,
I don't really have my thesis just yet. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to... I have arguments in my head that I could use for the book, but what I'm trying to do is gather as much information as I can so that I can have something original to say, because a lot of ink has been spilled on Stan Lee over the years,
yeah.
And I want to be able to stake out a claim for something that hasn't been argued before, and... right now, I could definitely very effectively write a book that makes arguments that have already been made, and it would probably do okay, but I want something that like really gets you jazzed up.
It's interesting to me, I know you said you didn't want to talk about this part of the process, but it's interesting to me that that wasn't the initial part of the book, the initial pitch for the book.
What do you mean?
That there wasn't Stan Lee... blank. This is the idea.
No, well, I mean, I wrote an out. Don't tell anyone, but I wrote this outline making an argument.
Sure, we won't share this podcast.
Okay, great. Thank you. I wrote an outline making an argument, but the understanding with the editor was basically like make an argument and then like you can go back and change it around based on evidence if you need to. But like, there's no one really. They don't really expect you to fully have everything before you start. That would not really make sense and would be bad journalism.
Right, because I'm sure it changes as you start.
Sure, as you learn more. I mean, yeah. I should have mentioned, the reason that I got the call initially was because I wrote a profile of Stan when he was still around, published in early 2016, and you know, I had a take there, but I'm not going to invalidate that. I'm not going to say like I got it wrong, but I think I might be able to build into something a little more nuanced and rich or whatever. Or maybe I'll fall flat on my face. I have no idea.
Was there anything you found out when on your trip that you were like, oh man, I didn't know that?
Oh yeah. Let's see, that I didn't know. I'm really hesitant to say any of the stuff I found that was really surprising because I don't want to spoil the book.
Right.
But I will say I'm not the first person to mention this. It was already mentioned in a previous Stan biography that Tom Spurgeon and Jordan Raphael wrote a few decades ago. There's this folder from the mid-1970s where Stan left some notebook sheets of notebook paper where he just scribbled down ideas, like really scribbled them. Like it's just jotted down. I have no idea what the circumstance was, but some of them are hilarious, like unintentionally. One of them, perhaps my favorite, is "The mob takes over America. Now what?"
I mean, good question.
It is a good question. Weirdly, then, Brian Michael Bendis took that idea, I don't think directly from Stan, but like United States of Murder Incorporated is basically that, which I don't think Bendis went to the archives to find that.
But no, I mean, there's not much of an idea there to begin with.
It's not that much. You can kind of just run with it, I suppose. Right. But no, there's some very weird stuff in there. He had a lot of ideas and a comparatively few of them actually like took off. Like that's the thing that you forget about Stan Lee is, you know, he and Kirby and Ditko and a few other collaborators between like 1961 and when Stan became the president and publisher and stopped writing regularly in the early 70s. You know, there were some truly world changing ideas that came out of there. And prior to that, and after that, Stan spent a lot of time coming up with ideas that did not really change the world or even were recognized by the world. I mean, can you name one project that Stan did in the past 20 years that...
Stripperella.
Stripperella, sorry. As soon as I said that, I was like, he's going to say Stripperella. Yeah. Stripperella is
you can tell by his eyebrows.
It's pretty iconic. Like, okay, so there's Stripperella. Mm-hmm. But, like, did you watch The Condor?
No.
Did you watch most? Oh, wow. Somebody watched The Condor. No way.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Good for you.
What you'll find over the course of the show is every time you say, well, you guys don't know this, one or two people know.
That is the thing about comic book nerds, isn't it?
Yeah.
You never assume. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so I was in Wyoming, then I went to Los Angeles for 2 weeks to interview people who knew him and go to that Stan Lee tribute event that Kevin Smith hosted, and that was interesting in and of itself. But I'm talking too much now, though.
No. That was actually the next thing I was going to ask you is what is the follow-up after you spent the time in the archives? Is it interviews at this point?
It's a ton of interviews and a ton of reading through stuff from the archives, reading books, reading other interviews that have been done. I mean, there's no... You know, the thing I'm trying to make my peace with is the fact that I will not ever, nor is it possible for me to, get through everything Stan ever did or was profiled in or interviewed about or whatever. I'm just never going to get through all that material. And I apologize to my future readers that I can't be as comprehensive as one would like to be when it comes to writing a biography, but there's just not enough time in the world. The guy just kept cranking stuff out and kept talking to people. And it would take me, you know, he lived to be almost 96. It would take me 96 years to get through it all.
Yeah. You're working on some other stuff at the same time.
Yeah, though, right? Yeah. So I'm still part-time at New York Magazine, so I'm still cranking out stuff there. I have a piece going up tomorrow about this really interesting political cartoonist, but it's kind of a downer.
Tell us.
I know. Fun times. Yeah. It's
politics and a downer? I'm in.
Welcome to Comic Book Club. The fun one that I'm mentioning now because I love my editor, but he has not gotten around to even reading the first draft, and I need him to, so I'm going to put it out into the world, like, the secret style, and then, like, maybe... maybe it'll actually get attended to. I wrote this piece I have now coming up, spent on almost 2 years on and off. It's a long reported feature about the failed and forgotten Superman Broadway musical of 1966. What? Here's another one. Do people in the audience, I'm not going to assume anymore. I have some slow clapping happening. Are people familiar with It's a Bird, .. Yeah. It's a Plane, .. It's Superman? Yeah. So It's a Bird, It's a Plane.
People finish that title.
As I was saying it. Yeah, no kidding. Impressive. Yeah, so It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman. Only lasted 6 weeks in its initial run. Wow. But it had this star-studded team behind it. The book was written by Robert Benton and David Newman, who are the guys who wrote Bonnie and Clyde and Kramer versus Kramer, and then went to, later in a complete coincidence. They claim this literally had nothing to do with them doing the musical. They were then co-writers on the 1978 Richard Donner Superman. The music and lyrics were written by Charles Strauss and Lee Adams, who are the people who did the music and lyrics for Bye Bye Birdie and Annie, two pretty well-known musicals. It was directed by Hal Prince, who has more Tonys than any other person in history. Wow. And it was Superman. Like, this thing should be huge, right? Like, we should all know this thing. And my story is kind of investigating, well, why didn't this work? Why have there... And there have been so many attempts to bring it back. And I won't get into the details of all of them, but they all fail for one reason or another. It seems almost cursed. But I do, in the article, have a theory that I think it has reached its finished end point, like where it's supposed to be, in the form of this 1 hour long children's version with all of the like stuff that doesn't work, including this horrifically racist subplot about a group of evil Chinese acrobats called the Flying Lings. The less about which is said is the better. All that stuff gets cut out, and this 1 hour children's version is just like what a, you know, 8-year-old wants to see in a story about Superman. It's great. And like the Cincinnati Children's Theater put it together, and I have this feeling that like it's going to have this long afterlife as a result of that.
Wasn't there, I might be remembering this wrong, but wasn't there a version that was revised by Roberto Aguirre-Sagasta?
Yes. Yeah. There was, and I get into that. I won't reveal exactly what went wrong with that one, but yes, Roberto Aguirre-Sagasta of Riverdale fame and many other things fame.
Who also revised Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Correct. Man, you are
talented.
On it. He's
just
very
with
talented.
Him, though.
Yes, Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark happened almost like right after he finished up working on this Dallas production of It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman, where he literally just threw out the book and completely rewrote it and added in a bunch of Superman characters that were not in the initial version. And for reasons that I will tease and say you have to read the article, it will probably never see the light of day again. It's a weird, wild story that spans many decades, and I'm very proud of it, and hopefully it will actually get published at some point. I think people will enjoy it. So.
Cool. Very cool. We'll definitely look for that, as well as the big downer coming tomorrow. That's
exciting. Yeah. Tune in.
We're going to move on to our next section, which we like to call the stack.
The stack! Woo!
And in the stack, we're going to talk about a couple of comics that came out this week. Good or bad for them. We'll kick it off with this one. One of Pete's favorite titles, Murder Falcon.
Murder Falcon.
For those of you who are new to
Thank
the show,
Bruce,
Pete likes Murder Falcon so much, he made his own t-shirt for it. There's a Murder Falcon t-shirt. They're not publicly available. Pete made it. Pete, you want to talk about this book, why you like it so much?
It's, first of all, it's a story about metal, the music, and what it means to people and how it can save lives. Also, it's about a band that's broken up and how they get back together. It's also a story about love. He talks with his ex-girlfriend. There's something for everybody in this
You are
thing.
Skipping past so many parts of this book, Pete. Yep. It's about a falcon with an enormous axe arm that murders people.
Yeah,
but and he fights demons.
Yeah, but he fights demons. He's still good.
He's a good. He's not a bad guy.
Yeah. He's a good guy.
This book is great. In this issue, they're putting the band together. We learn about a very classic Kiss-style metal band that fought these evil dimension-spanning demons back in the day. Yeah. But what really works about this book is the pacing of it, where it goes between these insane action sequences and then cuts to these very quiet scenes of the main character trying to bond with it's his girlfriend or ex-wife?
Ex-girlfriend, yeah.
Ex-girlfriend.
Or ex-wife, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a ring, yeah.
It alternates between them. It's really good. I'm very surprised.
Yeah, Daniel Warren Johnson, who is the creator slash artist slash writer and letterer, is a very have you guys ever met him? You should have him on the show sometime. He's a really nice guy.
I would freak out.
I think you'd do great with it. Yeah. I met him at a con, and he was easily one of the nicest people I've ever met at a convention. He was just very chatty, and he's just so talented.
Yeah.
Where was this? Like, he
I don't know.
Just sitting under a rock somewhere.
Yeah,
I'm glad it's out now, though.
Definitely, even if I'm not a big metal fan, I don't know if you can tell looking at me, but I love this book. Like, I think it channels the music really well. It channels the sense of the music. It's a lot of fun, but it's also very deeply emotional at the same time.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to another one, Age of X-Men, Next Gen, number one. Now, if you haven't been reading the X-Men comic books, a couple of the X-Men are still alive. The rest of the X-Men have been sent to this sort of utopia, sort of 1984 George Orwell-esque world where mutants are the dominant species. Everybody is a mutant. They all have powers, but something is very wrong beneath the surface. Each of these titles are telling a different story. This is talking about the young X-Men characters who are still at school. I like this a lot more than I thought I would. Like, I thought I would be bummed out about...
Like, Age of X-Men in general or just Next Gen? Yeah, in general, yeah.
And this one is dealing specifically with one character. Is Glob Herbin? I always forget his name.
Yeah, Glob.
Glob. He clearly realizes what went wrong, and he remembers the real universe where nobody else does. So there's this nice thing running below the surface where he keeps stopping himself from telling everybody everything's wrong, but everybody else doesn't know it. So that's the kind of the conflict going on in the issue.
Plus, he's writing fanfic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's writing fanfic. That's right. Friendfic, too. Yeah. He's including his friend.
What do you think about this? How are you feeling about
Next Gen and Age of X-Men? I agree with you. I'm enjoying it more than I thought I was going to. You know, it's so weird. It's so hard to get people really jazzed about the X-Men these days. And, there are rumors about interesting things that'll be happening later this year that we'll find out whether these rumors are true or not. But I was sort of thinking this was going to be yet another attempt to kind of, you know, pump the gas and get no result. But no, it's kind of a fun little twist on the Age of Apocalypse idea from 95 of just sort of, you know, throwing everything into this new world, and Age of M as well. I mean, it's, I'm sorry, House of M. Ooh. And it's fun. I like X-Man too. I like the idea of bringing back this Warren Ellis thing where he's like the mutant shaman, which I find.
Yeah, there's something about the sense of it that it does feel like this shiny, happy world, but there's always danger lurking below the surface that I think is working very well for the titles.
Yeah, it's good. I almost don't even like the danger as much as just I like the world building. You know, I'd be happy if everything was just perfectly gleaming and wonderful.
There needs to be conflict in fiction.
Oh. Really?
Yeah, I don't know if you...
you clearly haven't been to Scandinavia and watched, like, the slow TV that they watch there, where it's just, like, a train going along for 3 hours. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen Breaking Happy? That's one of my favorite shows.
But there's a lot of really sweet moments. Like, he's just talking to Chicken, and they had names of all the X-Men. It's adorable and amazing. And, like, he was one of those characters where I was like, this guy seems ridiculous. But the more we kind of get to know him, he's fantastic. And
For those of you who don't regularly read the X-Men books, Glob is a big pink blob with eyeballs and a skeleton floating in him.
Yeah,
that's pretty much it. I'm not sure he has any powers.
I don't think he's a Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely creation, right? Am I getting that right? Yeah. No, he's a visual character.
Yes,
above all,
he's good. Yeah. I like him. All right, last one we're going to talk about. This is a Pete favorite, The Punisher, number 8 from Marvel Comics.
Unlike the Punisher TV show, we do not get to see Frank Castle fuck in this comic.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Sorry. You can just imagine it happening between the panels.
Yeah.
Punisher is in jail.
He's in jail.
Baron Zemo's jail. He's in bad guy jail. He's been tortured, a skull carved on his chest. He's had his head shaved. Yeah. He's been recruited by an evil nun to work for him.
There's an evil Punisher elsewhere.
But there's an evil Punisher.
Someone
elsewhere.
Pretending to be the Punisher out there.
Yeah.
And the Punisher is finally trying to break out of jail, or rather take over the jail, this issue. How you feel about this, Pete?
Well, this is a fun issue because it's like, you know, Punisher has minions who's doing his tasks for him. So it's like he gets to kind of be the boss.
Do you like that, though? Because you like the Punisher murdering people.
I do, yes, very much
so. But now he's not directly murdering people.
No, but what's nice is he's like, okay, you know, I have a bigger problem. Sure, I could kind of work my way up through the ranks, killing everybody till I got to the top. But he's got a nun with him now, so he's like, listen, I'll be a little bit more sensitive. I'll let other people murder as well, and I'll share the love. And I think that's what religion is about.
All hail the Punisher.
What do you think about this, Ed?
I enjoyed it. You know, it's sort of a classic prison breakout montage issue where you just have lots and lots of narration of what here's what we're gonna do, and yeah. then you watch as it happens while it's being narrated. And but it was very effective, and you know, Matthew Rosenberg clearly put a lot of thought into how you break out of a prison, and I appreciate
that. Scary.
There's projectile vomiting.
You gotta use everything you got.
You gotta use everything you got. There's fertilizer. There's sewage in the shower. It was a good time, and I really dug the pencils. I think Szymon Kudrzanski.
Sure. Yeah, could
be. I don't know who this person is, but they're very talented. I also you can't see it on the podcast, but listeners know that Evil Punisher has a scene where he looks with one eye very wide open and the other scrunched shut, and he looks completely insane, and it's very good. So
yeah, the pencils across the board. Yeah. This has been an insanely dark arc, even for the Punisher.
Yeah, even by Punisher standards, right. Yes.
But it's fun. It's fun to read. So yeah. There you go.
It is
fun.
Cool. Good for you.
It is fun.
All right, great. That is it for the stack.
Yay!
Guys, we're going to move on to our next section, which is my favorite section because it comes out to you. It's your audience question.
All right.
Let's do this.
Audience question.
Should I frame up what's going on with audience questions?
No, I mean, let's just field some questions, see what happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah, see what happens.
We got a hand up way in the back. You know, we got some in the front here.
Okay, all right. You, sir, right there. What's your name? What's your question?
Kevin, and first I'm going to say that To Be or Not to Be, 1942, Jack Benny, Carol Lombard, one of my favorite films as a kid.
You know more about Jack Benny than I do, so God bless.
You were talking about Stan Lee's list of ideas, and one of the comics that we discussed just now, you know, has a title that you think you think they had the title first.
Murder Falcon?
Exactly.
Yes.
I mean, it sounds like it's from a TV edit of a profanity.
Yes. Oh, you're right. I get it now, yeah. Murder Falcon! Yeah, okay.
What is a comic that you've read that has an idea that you're just like, I don't get how this could possibly have been come up with, how everybody thought it could work, but it does.
But it does. Ooh, that's a really good question.
I was hoping you were going the other way, because I had a list of things that
just the worst ideas.
Yeah, worst ideas. Like, how did this get passed? But
you know, one that, this isn't probably, you know, the best example of it, but one idea that when you look at it on paper really shouldn't work, but ended up being one of the better comics of the aughts was Ex Machina, which is just a superhero is mayor of New York City. That sounds terrible, right? Like, that just sounds like it's going to be like, you know, cheap West Wing style bullshit, and then he flies around a little bit. But that managed to really mesh political drama and superheroics in a way that I found fascinating for a number of years.
I thought that way when I heard of DMZ.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck, man? I don't want to read about this. This is about New York City being a demilitarized zone. And I already kind of feel that way a little bit. Like, this is going to be way too fucked up. But actually was amazing and really fun to read.
Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I don't have any answers. I'm
sorry. Oh, okay.
I'll think about it. I'll think about it some more. What else? Who else has a question? The lights are.
There was one in the back.
One in the back? Yes, you, sir. Come on down. What is your name and what is your question?
Hi. Sorry. My name's Jarrell.
Hi, Jarrell.
You are really just stripping on the water.
Okay.
I felt bad asking a Superman-related question because obvious reasons.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the Superman musical before.
Yeah, yeah.
And going off of that and Spider-Man, what was it?
Turn off the dark. Yes.
Turn off the dark. Having some research and having some, you know, insight into it, mm-hmm. do you believe that there is a scenario where a superhero musical could work?
Yes, I do. And in fact, I wish I could have seen Roberto Aguirre Sacasa's rewritten book for It's Bird, It's Planet, Superman, because everything I hear about it makes me think maybe that could have been the silver bullet. It really could have been something that could pull it off. And there's a superhero musical in New York right now just called Superhero, which I saw, didn't love. Your mileage may vary, but I think it's certainly possible. They're both, you know, both musical theater and superhero fiction are very, you know, broad strokes, you know, exposition heavy. Everybody explains what their emotions are. You know, you can mesh those things well, I think, if you put your mind to
it. Yeah, I mean, the people would say that the Shrek musical was great. People said the SpongeBob musical was great.
Oh, and there's Dr. Horrible. I know Joss Whedon is like on the outs with people, but like Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog is a lot of fun.
Well, or if you look at Legion or Umbrella Academy.
Yes.
Mean, if you took particularly Umbrella Academy, which frankly I did not love the Netflix show.
Yeah.
But if you distilled it down to a stage version, the musical numbers in it are great.
Oh, the musical numbers are terrific.
They barely do superhero stuff, so you absolutely put it on stage.
Yeah. No, it's a good question, and I think it can be done.
Yeah, I agree. It can be done.
We got one over here. Before we go over, for no particular reason, since we have some new people in the audience, we should probably explain one particular aspect of Brian's
questions. Oh, Jesus Christ. I don't know why you always have to spell shit out for people. Give them the benefit of the doubt. They're smart.
Give them the
humans.
Benefit of the doubt to understand this fucking insane thing that's happening in the show.
It's not that insane.
That makes no sense.
It's not that
great.
Insane.
So in December, I'll explain to our guest at least, because
here
he doesn't understand. In December, we found out during our last show of the year that Pete has been secretly, without telling anybody, running a Punisher quiz on our show for 5 years.
Wait, how?
Well, he's setting up a little bit wrong. Like, you know how, like, basically, I was watching my brother's kids play video games, uh-huh. and they were like, oh, yeah, if you can unlock things, if you use certain characters and go over to them and, you know, ask the right question or, you know, whatever. So I was like, oh, man, what a cool idea. I wish we did something like that on our show where somebody said something, it, like, unlocks something that maybe they didn't know was there.
Right. So you did that, but then you didn't tell anybody.
That's right. That's right. For 5 years, I didn't tell anybody.
For 5 years.
And then at the last show at the end of the year, I couldn't take it anymore. And it kind
after
of like...
What was the breaking point?
Well, organically, it almost years. Came up. Like, so we were talking about something, and I was like, this is fucking close as it's going to get. And then I kind of jumped on the opportunity.
Sure. So he's been hiding this... pile of garbage over here.
It's the Punisher shrine. All right. You asshole. Show some goddamn respect.
But this is not the prize. There's something hiding in here that's the prize that he's kept, I know, for 5 years. You have to say the secret phrase to unlock it, and then there's a quiz.
Quiz.
And then there's...
If you pass the quiz, there's a physical challenge.
Right. So every time we find out a little bit more about this thing, finally, 2 shows ago, it was finally unlocked. Somebody discovered the key phrase to unlock it, entered the quiz. We've ran that quiz twice. They haven't completed it. You have to do Punisher trivia.
What was the phrase?
You're going to find out.
I'll find out.
That's what I'm saying. It's so obvious. We didn't have to fucking explain it. We could have just let it happen.
Okay.
Calm down, Pete. Also, the other thing is, Pete, you're going to have to run through all the questions.
I'm not running through all the questions.
No, run through the questions.
We're not going to do it. We're picking up right where we left off.
No, man.
We're already wasting so much goddamn time.
This is not how quizzes work. You're terrible. What is your name? What's your question, sir?
I'm John. I want to take the secret Punisher quiz. And
unlocked
Executioner,
it.
The Joker, 48,000 something. And yes, Pete. Yeah, he was a Navy SEAL,
all right, Dick.
According to you.
All right, here we go. Question.
I just want to explain, he previously answered how many questions? Four or five?
Six. No, five.
Five. Okay, so we have two questions left of the quiz and then potentially a physical challenge. Okay, and go.
Thank you. Okay, here we go. Question number six. In the comics, Frank chooses the skull while in Vietnam hunting blank. Is it A, the Viet Cong, B, a sniper named the Monkey, or C, rival assassin codenamed Bushwhacker? So when he picked the skull, who is it for? A, B, or C? There is no D, sir. I appreciate your creativity. Appreciate your creativity.
Just because, like, two of them don't sound like anything I remember, I'm going to say A. He was hunting Viet Cong.
Oh, my God. No. Dang it.
No.
That is incorrect, sir. I am sorry. Oh, sorry, right, sir.
Thank you very much. This will drag on for another week, I guess.
Yeah, it will drag on a little bit longer.
Yes.
And it takes longer because you have to explain it each time. I mean, we could have just had that happen.
Yes, that's fine. Thank you for bearing with that. Do you want to throw out any other questions in case people are listening at home for the first time?
Nope.
Well, simple
great,
as
thanks,
that.
Pete. all right, that's it for your audience questions.
Yay!
And now it's time for our next section, which is trivia with Pete.
Thank you, Alex, for that lovely introduction. Here's the part where we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the gift card to Midtown Comics. Because if you had $25, you go to a comic book shop. It's an opportunity to win $25 free. Who would like $25 free?
Yeah. And this is simple trivia where you could just walk down, people feed you the answers, and you get $25. But I should mention, at the end of this trivia quiz, there's a secret trivia quiz.
Oh, man. This show got really, like, baroque since the last time I was on.
Over the past months, man. It's been fucking strange. Just seriously, you can come down on stage and basically
it's just
get
a simple racing of it.
All right.
You won last week, though. Nobody else?
2 weeks ago.
Oh, it was 2 weeks.
To be fair, I am going to give the card to someone.
Okay, cool.
A lucky person in the audience.
Okay.
Ooh, nice. Wow. All right.
It's getting my
very trivia. Generous.
Yeah.
All right. So today's trivia is just on comic book topical.
Real quick, though. Hi, it's Jarrell again. Okay.
Jarrell, audience, Jarrell.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to read you a question. Listen to all three possible answers. Get all three questions right. $25 yours. Here we go.
Someone else's, but yeah.
Okay. Sorry. You're right. Question number one. Marvel is launching a new Giant Man title. With how many Giant Men? How many will be in the book? Is it A4, B1, don't pick that, or C, phone booth, which is not a number, so it's wrong. So you could pick A for $25, or you could pick something else and be completely wrong.
I'm going to pick A.
A is correct.
Wow,
there's
going to
be four Giant Men in the Giant Man title. Confusing.
I still don't know why they didn't call it Giant Men. That would have been a great name.
Yeah, it's just weird. Yeah.
I know. I thought I misread it the first time I saw it. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, that's why I put it in here, because I was just scratching my head about it. All right, question number two. For the War of Realms, Marvel heroes turn into blank. Is it A, cats, B, Asgardians, which makes a lot of sense, or C, Genghis Khan? So it's either A, cats, don't pick that one, or B, Asgardians, War of Realms.
In my defense, I'm a big fan of C, but I'm going to have to go with B, Asgardians.
All right, great. Correct, sir, correct. Here we go.
Yay.
Last one.
You're this close.
Who is going, who is doing the next Batman TMT team up? Batman and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles team up. Is it A, Kevin Eastman, B, Scott Snyder?
Okay, actually, I'm going to stop you right there. It is A, Kevin Eastman.
Well,
but let him do the C. What was the C?
Because the C is the joke answer that then ties everything together.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
C is Rufus. He's already got it. Eastman is coming back to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with the team of Batman. I'm very excited.
So
$25
is
yours.
Wait, it's not mine. Remember.
Right. So you can give it to whoever you want.
So what was the original C?
The first C, I should say.
The first C was phone booth.
Phone booth.
Phone booth, Genghis Khan.
Rufus.
Rufus.
Do you want to tell them? Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Wild Stallions.
Wild Stallions.
All right, there we go. Watch out for that cord. It'll trip you up.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Great. Pete, you got any more trivia quizzes?
Nope.
Great. Okay, very cool.
Hooray.
As we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
Oh, man, a lot of great stuff coming out. It's tough to pick. I'm going to go with Aquaman number 45.
Any particular reason?
Curveball. I'm excited. They got kind of a new team on. I'm excited with what's going on. Yeah, I just want to see, the last issue really blew me away.
Sure. So, yeah, Kelly Sue DeConnick took over the title. Yeah. Aquaman has lost his memory. He seems to be being manipulated by these...
We've all been there.
...strange magic people who all live in an island together. He's slowly regaining his powers and his memory and going on an epic journey to regain himself. I agree. It's been great so far.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to Naomi number 2 coming out from DC Comics.
Yeah.
New title by Brian Michael Bendis. It's an original property set in the DC Universe. And what we found out in the first issue, this young girl lived in a small town. Superman comes by. He's fighting a supervillain. She goes, wow, that's the first time this has happened in the town. And somebody says, actually, that happened once years ago. And by the end of the issue, she finds out it was the day she was born.
What?
And starts investigating the mystery of what went on, what she hasn't been told about
Superman's
her adoption, her true parents, etc. Don't think that's what's going to happen.
Oh.
But so far, it's classic Brian Michael Bendis character work. If you're interested in a review of it, we're going to do a review in our Stack podcast, which goes in the Comic Book Club feed Wednesday, 9 a.m. with new comic book reviews, so check that out.
And you forgot to show me the diamond list for next week or tomorrow, so I don't actually know what's coming out.
No,
I really,
that's all right.
When I was a kid, I used to have memorized exactly what week things came out on.
Oh, wow.
Well, yeah, plug your stuff. What should
plug my
be
stuff?
Out?
Oh, yeah. I'd say follow me on Twitter, but I'm trying to take a break from Twitter so I can focus on the book. We'll see how long that lasts. But I will post things on my website when I do new stories, and that's abrahamreisman.com. You can spell it correctly, or you can misspell Reisman, transpose the I and the E, and it will still direct to the website. I bought that domain.
And I forgot to ask earlier, do you know roughly when the book is coming out?
Scheduled. I'm sure I'm jinxing it by actually putting this out there in the world, but the scheduled plan is fall 2020, so it's a while from now, but we'll see if I can actually stick to all my deadlines. Virtually everyone I know who's written a book, when I ask for advice, they're like, oh, just be prepared, you're going to ask for extensions and your editor's going to be really mad at you. And I'm like, no, not me. I'm always on time. And like, I don't know, it's a lot of words.
Do you have anything like a tip line or anything like that? Like if somebody knows.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that's actually a thank you. I'm casting a wide net. So if anybody like had any interesting interactions with Stan that you ever want to funnel my way, I'd love to hear them. You can get me at abraham@abrahamreisman.com. Just Google Abraham Reisman email, Abraham Reisman contact. I'm very easy to find.
All right. Very cool. Couple of things before we go. The show is free to come see and free to listen to, but it does cost us a little bit of money to do. If you want to support it, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, beyond this podcast, we do a bunch of other podcasts. We have a regular Riverdale podcast that we do most Wednesdays at Riverdale After Dark. Also, we have a Deadly Class podcast running right now called Deadly Cast. American Gods is coming back soon. We have an American God cast.
Oh,
a bunch
man.
Of others you can check out. I know, it's too much. And what else you want to plug, Pete?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show.
Yeah.
Follow us on Twitter @comicbooklive, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. A couple of people we want to thank before we go. We want to thank Abe for being on the show.
Yay for me. Hooray.
Boothman Prime.
Woo!
But most of all, we want to thank you guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Totally free. Please tell your friends. Good night.
Thanks,
good
everybody.
Night.
Thanks for coming out. Really appreciate it. Thanks for listening at home.